This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellows with monkey sounds in there and called good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in, Danny and Dusty. Glorious Monday. My goodness.
It is a nice Monday.
Yeah, it is. It is. It rain's about to start, I think, tomorrow.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I don't care, though. My voice is shot.
As it is wont to be.
Yeah. It was kind of a big sportsing weekend. I don't know if anybody saw.
Well, I mean, I did make a trip to Seattle, so yeah.
Yeah. That's where we're going to start. Blazers preseason.
Indeed.
Actually, I think today we need to talk a little Blazers. They played two games.
Yeah, they did. And we'll talk about it.
Hour
number three, yeah.
But that is obviously on the back burner. What an experience Saturday was. Very rarely in our sports world do we get a game that has the hype, that has the expectations.
Lives up to it.
And it lives up to it in every sense. In every sense. And that's what we got on Saturday down in Eugene. I mean, unless you're an Ohio State fan. But if you are, you're probably not listening to this. That game, that buildup, that environment, everything that they kind of talked about, it was there on Saturday. And boy, it was that was fun as hell. And I think that it kind of started when we were doing the pregame show, okay? So we do Anthony Newman, Andy Dirk Johnson, and myself, we camp out in front of the Mashovsky Center. 4 hours before kickoff is when we start our pregame. The gates don't open until 3 hours before kickoff. And usually for those games, it is people are just trickling in. It's like, as we're in the second hour of our broadcast, we start seeing some folks. And then by the last half hour, it really starts getting full. There was a line that was probably 150 yards long when we started our pregame show.
That sounds about right.
To get in. When the gates open, there were people everywhere. And it was like, okay, yes, it's already starting to live up to it. The buildup, it was there. It was like you can feel the energy around the stadium, and it was early. And then when you got into the stadium, I was blown away by Autzen Stadium. Record crowd, 60,129.
And you felt it.
You felt it, man.
You felt it. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk all about it, but my favorite thing about this has been the whole, like, the Pac-12 is going to have to adjust to the Big Ten thing. You and I have talked about this off air a million times,
yeah. But
like, there was some pompous arrogance of the Big Ten, like, oh, you're going to have to adjust to how we do things. I'm like, guys, you're going to have to adjust to how they do things out here. It's loud out here. It's fast out here. Quarterbacks know how to throw the ball out here.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Yeah. And you're seeing those adjustments pop up all over the Big Ten already. Now, USC has been face-planted three times in a row, but Washington has already found their way to upset Michigan, upset air quotes. Like, there's things that you're seeing in the noise that came out of Autzen, which it came through on TV.
Did it?
Yeah, it came through on TV.
It did?
Yeah.
I got a chance to catch up with Noah Eagle before the game, who came on with us last week. He's a cool-ass dude.
Yes.
I was blown away. He's a really...
Very normal dude.
Very normal, really nice guy. But we were talking pregame, and he was like, I'm excited. He goes, I've heard a lot about this place. It's my first time to Eugene. And this is, they got in on Thursday. He was like, you can feel it. You
palpable.
Can feel it like boiling up on Friday, all day Friday, and then all day Saturday. He's like, I'm excited for this. He goes, how loud do you think it's going to be? He goes, I was like, really damn loud. And I will tell you this, on the radio broadcast, we have a crowd mic.
Mm-hmm.
We do not adjust the crowd mic.
I had to turn it down.
15 decibels. We had to turn it down because it was blowing out everything.
Well, like, I would say there was multiple shots of people like of their watch, their Apple Watch, where it was 115 dBs or louder.
Yeah.
That's a loud crowd.
I saw I don't know how loud it got. I probably should know that. I probably should have looked this up. But the loudest that I saw somebody with a decibel reader was 129.
Yeah.
It's pretty loud. That's pretty loud.
Josh Pate said it's the loudest stadium in the Big Ten.
Yeah. Saw him on the sideline, mm-hmm. and he said it's living up to everything.
Yeah.
You know, it is the loudest. That environment. And look, Ohio State fans showed out. Yeah. There was a lot of red. A
lot of red in that crowd.
It was not what Ohio State was telling everybody it would be. Mm-mm. I can tell you that much. It was like 85-15.
Yeah. It was not 60-40.
No. It was 85-15, and that place doesn't get as loud if there is more than 85-15. But the Bree Amaranthus, she had the photo go viral of the Ohio State fan mm-hmm. plugging his ears. You had Zachary Neal from Ducks Wire. He had the text of, you know, an Ohio State fan sending it to his buddy, loudest stadium ever.
Yeah.
It was a different level in the student section.
They didn't stop.
They made their presence felt like they are the reason why it was as loud as it was. Like, when you would go down to that end of the field, which was the end of the field that mm-hmm. Ohio State was going towards at the end of the game, it was so loud down there. Like, you could not.
That the game was close hear. In that there weren't too many haymakers, it kept the crowd in it the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I thought it was a game full of haymakers, but it was like...
I mean, pushing the game one way or the other.
No,
yeah.
It was close the entire time, man. And that made the environment that much better. Mm-hmm. There were times in lulls where it was like, Ohio State's getting some momentum. They're mm-hmm. they're moving the ball. And we're going to break the game down in what Oregon's defense was able to do, but the momentum swings in that game kept everybody in it. And that's the heavyweight fight we wanted. That is exactly, it lived up to every bit of the buildup, the anticipation, everything that all of the fans on both sides could have asked for. They got it. And I saw James Crepia, the Oregonian. He had the TV numbers today, and it averaged, I believe it was 10.3 million, which is the biggest game on NBC since Ohio State Penn State a handful of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
On ABC. It's the biggest Big Ten primetime game since 2008. It peaked at 13.4 million.
Yeah, I wonder if old Mickey Mouse regrets getting off that game.
Is it the trade? Oops. The trade?
Yeah, because
probably wish he had that trade.
Yeah,
now.
Because remember they swamped it for Ohio State, Michigan.
Yeah,
doesn't look. It's still a great rivalry game. It did not have that. It's not going to have anywhere near that juice.
God, that game had a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
It had the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Imagine how many more people would have watched it if it wasn't going up against Ole Miss LSU too, which was also a decent game, not as good as this. Oregon,
it was a great
State,
game. It was
good.
Also like 5 hours long.
Yeah, it but
how
that,
they do it in the
to
South.
That point though, it you they did peel some of the viewers mm-hmm. off because the SEC
is
addicted
SEC.
To SEC football.
Mm-hmm. Pow!
But Oregon, Ohio State, it lived up to it, and like this texture too on the Vancouver Ford text line 503-864-6326. I don't like it when we do the blackout crowd. Green or yellow pops. The black made the Ohio State red stand out in the crowd. It did.
Yeah,
I
said that is when I saw the Ducks come. When I saw they were wearing their blacks, they're cool and all, but particularly with Ohio State, I wanted to see a traditional color matchup.
Yeah,
I wanted to see a traditional color matchup.
Yeah.
Like, give me green, give me yellow. It also wearing white. Just I don't know. So many
the white pants. Why did Ohio State go white pants?
I don't.
Go wear your silver pants.
Yeah, I don't. It was weird.
Yeah,
there was no. It should like it, particularly in like if it's Oregon, it's Washington, it's Ohio State, it's Michigan, it's Penn State, it's USC.
Yeah,
any of those teams if they're playing each other in any sort of fashion, it should be a traditional matchup because you're talking about traditional teams.
Yeah, that was the loudest I've ever heard that place. It was the loudest stadium that you know I think all of the national writers, all of the pundits that were there. I had an elevator ride with Will Compton and Taylor Lewan bussing with the boys.
The boys! And they were hyped after the game.
Yeah, dude, that meathead moment Dan Lanning had with the bussing boys.
They were awesome.
Dude, tell me, though, like a younger skewing audience that they have, Dan Lanning broing out with those guys. Yeah. This was also the biggest recruiting weekend in Oregon's history,
yes.
And they're already starting to reap the benefits of that.
One public and multiple private.
Two public now.
Couple of two.
Yeah, they have the number one defensive lineman in the class of 2026. He committed like that night.
Mm-hmm.
And then today they flipped a defensive lineman from 2026 from USC to
God.
Oregon.
The five-star.
Yeah.
I didn't see that
the
one.
The Salt Lake City kid.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So it is, it was a big recruiting weekend, and that resonates. But on my elevator ride with the Bussin' with the Boys, I looked down and I noticed that Will Compton was wearing Reeboks. I said, dude, you can't wear Reeboks in the land of Nike. And his answer was the most Will Compton answer you'll ever hear. Well, I need to get hooked up. Somebody's got to hook me up. I need to hook up with some Nikes then.
Mm.
And it was like, you could see, Luan was like, you know.
His whole bit is wearing Monarchs.
Yeah.
That's his whole bit. He was an old man wearing Monarchs.
He was wearing Reeboks.
My butt.
He was wearing I think he was hoping somebody of more importance than me
would notice
and just throw some Nikes on him on the spot. But
I mean,
he didn't get that.
I'm sure
at least from me.
I'm sure that happens there. Just, you know.
I bet he got it before he got into the locker room. Like it was like, hey, we need to get you, this can't happen.
Those can't touch the ground.
Yeah, we can't have this happen. But it was star studded, man.
Mm-hmm.
I have a video on my phone of when the duck was on the motorcycle riding out, and standing right behind me was Caitlin Olson and Rob McElhenney. Sweet D and Mac from Always Sunny. And I heard them yelling as I'm doing my Charlie work. I'm down there videotaping the duck coming out on the motorcycle. I hear them on that video. You can hear them going, "Go Ducks!" And Mac is going, "Yeah, baby, let's go."
You throw in, "I love Wrexham."
I did.
There you go.
I did. Well, you got, yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to support the team.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to support the team. It's the only reason why I like soccer.
Yeah.
Well, Dad, my daughter plays.
There you go.
Wait. My daughter plays soccer. I have to admit I like soccer.
There you go.
There we go. But it was a star-studded affair. You had former players. You had, you know, Hollywood celebs. All of the people in the media were there, and it lived up to all the hype. And I'm with Masters Pete, who just texted in. Masters Pete says he's been going to Duck games for 40 years. Autzen has never, ever been louder. It was an environment that made a difference, too. I mean, four false start penalties in that game on Ohio State, it made a difference. It made a difference. And I think one of the things about having that game at home, that environment, that crowd, and I know the Ohio State fans were saying this on social media all week long leading up, you know, there's no way 60,000 people can be louder than 100,000. I think they found out it can be.
It can be. You don't need the six figures to get that loud.
When you build a stadium that has no way for noise to escape,
and seemingly all of the seats angle forward,
right on top of you. Yeah, it can do that.
Yeah,
it can do that. It was an experience, man. In the game itself, let's start diving into that, because one thing about Oregon winning, is it gets a big monkey off of Dan Lanning's back. It gets a big monkey off the Oregon program's back. And the way that they did it is what really popped out to me. This is Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
Here we go, 6 seconds left from after the 5-yard penalty, the 38-yard line of Oregon. Howard steps back to throw, looks right, pump fake, now will run, and has room and hooks down at the 28-yard line, but the clock has run out. The clock has run out. Will they review it? Will they review his hook slide?
I think the official in the middle of the field is trying to wave people back to the sideline just a minute ago so they can re-look at it.
Well, Dusty Hara, interesting call from you.
Guys, with 6 seconds to go, he slid with one to go. He did not pick up a first down, so the clock would not stop. But they had to keep running.
But they had a timeout. Did they try to call a timeout?
I don't think you can get a timeout off that quick. Referees have left the field.
Well, that's an indication.
This game is over.
All right, game is over. It's a final. Oregon is defeated. Number 2, Ohio State, 32-31. It's officially over.
That was the call right here on The Fan in the Oregon Sports Network. That was a wild finish. And I'll tell you, when I said the referees have left the field, literally the white hat was running right past me. And I was like, well, that means this game's over. We all didn't know whether the game was over or not because immediately the Duck sideline emptied onto the midfield. The students and the crowd started running out onto the field. And the refs were trying to keep everybody back, and I think it was to get Ohio State off the field. So nothing stupid happened, nothing, you know, those guys could get off the field safely. The officials were gone, though, in the chaos.
Oh, they knew it was coming.
At the end of that game, it was pandemonium down there. It was sheer pandemonium.
The second that last play happened, he slid down, I just went, oh, no. The look of, I mean, this is Buckner, this is Chris Webber, just brain fart.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Like, he goes down 2 seconds earlier and calls the timeout. Ohio State's got a chance to win.
Yeah, and this is, they do have a chance to win because as we work backwards from that moment, the Ducks come out, they call a timeout. And I know, and we will never hear the honest truth of this because that this is just the way that works. Ducks call a timeout with 10 seconds to go. After it was a offensive pass interference, which I know Ohio State fans are like, how do you call that? You know, DBs playing catch technique. Make no mistake, that penalty was called on the Oregon sideline. And there was a lot of working of the officials for 59 minutes and 50 seconds to, hey, the push off.
Also, Jeremiah Smith, every time he goes up for a contested catch, is a stiff arm.
Yeah, he fully extends both arms out.
I will say, for an 18-year-old kid to be able to boss every DB on the planet.
He is special, man.
He is that is a different dude. Like, he seals out like a power forward.
Yep.
It is. 18-year-olds are not supposed to have that awareness, that ability, or to be that tricky. It's not supposed to be all of those things at that age.
Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Egbuka, who also had a phenomenal game for Ohio State, those two guys are special.
Yep.
They are difference makers, and they were difference makers on Saturday.
But also Jeremiah Smith is a walking OPI.
That pass interference penalty backs him up. Oregon calls a timeout. They reassess. Now, the conspiracy theory that is out there is that Dan Lanning, who, you know, a lot of fans were calling a dumbass because he doesn't know how to control his timeouts and will go for it on fourth down, you know, see the Washington games last week, doesn't know how to manage a game, yada, yada, yada. Now, a lot of those same fans calling him a genius because he puts a 12th man on the field.
Yeah, I don't think so, Bob.
And we will not know the truth about that and how that worked out. But that 5-yard penalty runs 4 seconds off the clock. And you think of how ballsy of a call that is.
Yeah.
Because they were on the very fringe of
his range.
They needed about 10 yards to get into the range. You give them the 5 and they have 6 seconds and a timeout. They can run a slant, get it to the middle of the field, get down, call a timeout, and they have 2 seconds left. Average play, if you run a quick hitter like that, that's about 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. They would have left them with 2 seconds left to have a game-winning field goal. Ballsy call, right? If you intentionally are bringing that guy in, the 12th man off the field. I will say the reactions that I saw were not indicating either that or it was an amazing sell job. It was not indicative of we did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you want to call Lanning and his staff a genius and say it was premeditated like Warren Sharp did, mm-hmm. Tom Coughlin did do this as a head coach of the New York Giants yeah. years ago. So it's not like something that's never happened before. Yeah. I will never know if it was on purpose or not. But, I mean, you give them that 5 yards, they only need five more in 6 seconds to do it and a timeout. If Will Howard slides 2 yards earlier, they have a chance to call the timeout and kick that field
and
goal
all of a
in
sudden,
range.
Dan Lanning's a dumbass.
Yeah.
So, I don't really think that...
But as it was...
That's happening.
That penalty, it was an incompletion.
Mm-hmm.
They did not throw to the side where the 12th man came onto the field. Mm-hmm. They went to... Well, one-on-one with Jabbar Muhammad. Jabbar Muhammad makes a play on the ball. It was an incompletion. That sets up that play right there. And one thing that you can say about this defense, and I thought this was the story of the game for Oregon's defense. They did. It wasn't like it was a clamps down, suffocating defensive performance where they made plays all night long that Ohio State was flummoxed by. But you go back and you say, Oregon's defense, when it mattered, they made those plays. In that final play where Will Howard scrambles, he was trying to get the ball out quick, mm-hmm. and the defensive backs did their job.
A quasi-coverage sack in which he's taking off and running there is fine. He's just got to look up and see the scoreboard and go down.
And I hate that for Will Howard.
It sucks because he's going to get buried for it.
And he played a hell of a game.
Yeah.
He played, both of those quarterbacks played an outstanding game. But if you go back and you say where Oregon's defense made the plays when they mattered the most, right? After the Ohio State's opening drive where they marched down the field, I still don't understand how you don't review that catch slash interception that Jeffrey Bosa had.
I'm going to be in the minority here. Not that they shouldn't have reviewed it. The more I watch it, the more I think it's a simultaneous catch that Bosa walks away with in the end.
The ball bounced off of the tight ends, and at that point, Bosa was on top of him.
And you can't – look, if they had ruled it an interception, then I go right away with the interception. But I think it's a simultaneous – regardless of what I think, they should have reviewed it.
Yeah.
They absolutely unequivocally should.
And they had enough time.
Yes,
because I had heard this – because I obviously wasn't watching, but Ohio State ran up to the line like they were going to run a play. They did not run a play quickly at the line of scrimmage. From what I'd heard, NBC was able to run a replay before Ohio State ran the next play. Is that right?
Yeah, they ran a replay. Yeah. And
so they had enough time to run a replay there, so the replay booth obviously had time to review the play itself. And no buzz down. Whatever. 3 plays later, Ohio State scores. Okay, and that's a trend that, look, teams have moved the ball on Oregon their opening drives. Every single game this year, with the exception of Idaho in week 1, a team has either gotten points on their opening drive, or you had a, 38-yard missed field goal by Oregon State on their opening drive. You had Michigan State fumbling on the mm-hmm. 2-yard line on their opening drive. Teams have moved the ball against Oregon on their opening drive. That is nothing new. There's like a feeling out process that we've seen over, 5 of the first 6 games of the season. That wasn't a surprise. But where Oregon's defense was making plays throughout the course of the game, the second drive, Ohio State looks like they're marching again. They're running the ball really effectively. Mm-hmm. And Derek Harmon, in his big old mitts,
ripped that thing out.
Ripped the ball out of Quinshon Judkins' belly.
I think that was the biggest play in the game.
It was the one turnover.
Genuinely, I think that was the biggest play in the game because it felt like early Oregon weren't scared, but Ohio State was dictating early.
They were running the ball very effectively.
And it was like when they forced that turnover, all of us, because Ohio State goes down and scores, because it looked like they were going to do exactly what they did on the first drive, which was go down and score. And mm-hmm. it was like, oh boy, that play not only was a momentum stopper, but I think it gave Oregon the belief kind of situation where it was not that they don't belong. I think there's they know kind of who they are, but I think there was this is a different team than what has been the past 2 years, right? Like it's not, everybody's been together and it's this cohesive unit and you know what you got in everyone kind of a situation. This was like, okay, we're here. We belong. Mm-hmm. And when you get that, all of a sudden, it doesn't snowball, but it was just a moment where things shifted just enough to where you went, okay, there you go. Now you can get things going. Now, obviously, they go down and score and miss the extra point. And
that first, but that first quarter, Ohio State ran for 99 yards.
They just put the foot down and just thumped.
That play, it was one of the many pivot points, right? Right before the half was another big one where
the
Mateo Uiagalelei is getting down blocked. He's got the guard is on his hip.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know how he did it, but he reversed and ended up making a tackle on third and one.
Yep.
And it was a tackle for loss where he just dives the opposite way and gets the back down. That was another huge moment where it was like Ohio State had the opportunity.
I don't know why they didn't sneak that one after Will Howard had been so good. Like he just got behind his center. They ran the sneak, what, two times in the first half?
Yeah.
One for the touchdown and one for the on fourth down. And both times, he absolutely – I mean, he got 4 yards.
And it was Oregon nutted up.
They did.
In that second half.
Especially without Jordan Birch. Those ends, man, they were absolutely phenomenal.
There was an adjustment up front where – again, 99 yards rushing in the first quarter for Ohio State, 19 yards rushing on 12 carries in the second half. Oregon's defense, they played lights out against the run in the second half. You had multiple plays. I thought holding Ohio State to a field goal on their second-to-last drive, where the crowd forces a false start, defense holds, all of a sudden, then Oregon is playing for a field goal instead of having to go for it on fourth down and one from the goal line to get six. All they needed was three to take the 1 point eventual game winning the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
There, that was the defense coming up not all game long because Ohio State is too good. They are too, and you saw how talented that team is.
Yep,
they are too good to just say yeah. You know, we're going to just put clamps down, suffocate him. Good night, Charlie. But the defense made plays when it mattered. And the offense was wildly efficient.
There was almost no negative plays in this game. There were 5 total negative plays. 3 TFLs for Oregon, 2 for Ohio State. And there was 1 sack.
Yeah.
Like, there was almost no negative plays in this game. It was insane.
1 sack was when they needed it the most.
Yep.
I felt like, with Jordan Birch being out, Ohio State was going to put Tuioti and Uiagalelei in a position where they are the read guys.
Yep.
And they're going to do that because they want to take advantage of the youth that those two have. And they did it multiple times. But multiple times, Tuioti and Uiagalelei did their job and trusted that their teammates would do their job. And I think that's why you saw that run game kind of get shut down, because there's multiple times where they are putting those two in read situations, and they did what they were supposed to do, which was take the running back and then trust that someone else would take the quarterback, and they did that. The other thing, too, remember, Ohio State has those back-to-back big runs. You take those big runs out of it, Oregon won against their rushing attack all game. It's very similar to the Ashton Jeanty game with Boise State. You look at his yardage total and you're like, wow, Jeanty ate all game. And it's like, well, not really. He had 4 or 5 big runs, and then everything else, he's averaging about 3 yards a carry. It's kind of the same thing against Ohio State. So I felt like their run defense was superb because it put the ball in Will Howard's hands and it forced him to throw. And he's not going to beat you, Oregon, when he has to sit back in the pocket and throw.
This game was a huge one for Oregon, and the defense, I don't think Dan Lanning would have wanted it any other way, having his defense on the field at the end of the game, because this is kind of the identity that he had built.
Yeah.
Was it nip and tuck? Absolutely.
We'll see.
Did Ohio State leave a lot of plays out there and have the shoulda, coulda, wouldas?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think Oregon can look and say the exact same thing. You bobble a snap on an extra point.
Mm-hmm.
You miss a field goal. You get stuffed on the 2-yard line. You miss a 2-point conversion, right? You have you don't take points when you get stuffed on the goal line. there was a lot. And then, you know, Tez Johnson open in the end zone. I also think that he came open really quickly, but Dillon Gabriel was reading inside out.
Yeah.
And by the time he got outside,
it's too late.
They did a great job of caging Dillon Gabriel where he had to force that ball to Patrick Herbert, yeah. Right? There was a lot of those plays where you're like, so many plays left on the field for Oregon, too. That's a heavyweight fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you look for.
The thing that we had to talk about this at some point, too, is the coaching battles that we saw and Chip Kelly and Tosh LePoy going head-to-head. And yeah. I would think most people would look at that in a matchup and go, Chip definitely has the advantage, and yet I think Tosh had probably called his best game.
Yeah. Outstanding. I think Will Stein also called his best game because the offense unloaded the clip. Let's get to that after Will with SportsCenter.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Third down and two. Gabriel running. Ohio State showing pressure. Gave it to no. He kept it. He's going to get a first down of more. 20. Inside a block at the 10. To the 5. Touchdown. Dillon Gabriel. You thought I gave the ball away. Looky what I got. Home. 6 points. Touchdown. Tie ball game. Extra point coming up.
Jerry Allen on the call. Dillon Gabriel with the whoop. The plus one run game came into account for both of those teams. Will Howard making his legs a threat. Dillon Gabriel made his legs a threat, especially on that 27-yard touchdown run. Dillon Gabriel, the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week, he played outstanding. And I think a lot of the concerns of Dillon Gabriel in the red zone, the low red area, the interceptions, 3 in the last 2 games, about as clean of a game as you can play if you're Dillon Gabriel against a team of that caliber. You know, going 23 of 34 for 341, 2 touchdowns, and then with his legs on the ground, again, a 27-yard touchdown run. Hell of a day for Dillon Gabriel.
He made some plays, for sure, and his mistakes didn't come back to bite him. And that's the thing, is that in those kind of games, yes, you have to make the plays, but you have to make sure that the mistakes that you make aren't the crippling kind, and that didn't happen. Like I said earlier, in the first half, Gabriel had multiple times where he could have taken off and run, and he didn't, and I was like, you're going to have to. I get it. You're small. You're 5'11". You're maybe 200 pounds soaking wet, and you don't want to get hit. Like, I get it. Like, that front seven for Ohio State is massive, and you don't want to get your quarterback dinged up by those guys. But you got to take off. You've got to find a way. And he hit the one that mattered. He took off, took it to the house, and that really, I think, ended up being the difference in the game.
I think if you look at the offensive line and the way they have played, I think it's, what, now 4 straight games. They have not allowed a sack. A clean pocket, a lot of time for Dillon Gabriel to throw, and it made a big difference. And I thought the offensive line, again, was lights out in that they leaned on Ohio State. And usually when Oregon has lost these games in the past, it is up front, the opposition leans on them. And you saw in the first half, Oregon outgained by Ohio State 122-73 on the ground. In the second half, Oregon outgains Ohio State 82-19 on the ground. That final drive, Oregon was looking to milk as much time as they could. They got the ball with 6 minutes left on the clock, and they handed it over back to Ohio State under 2 minutes to go. A 4-minute, 15-second drive.
154, I think, when they got the ball.
It was a drive that you want to hang your hat on. Would you have liked to get 6 instead of 3?
Sure.
Absolutely.
But you're up and you put the pressure on them.
And that was as impressive as it gets. And I thought Will Stein, both Will Stein and Chip Kelly, emptied the clip.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd have thought Chip Kelly, the master of the spread, playing 53 1/3 across, making you defend all the way across the field, would come out under center T formation?
Yeah.
What?
Get three backs in the backfield.
Yeah. Stein comes out, and they knew, and this was the thing, we talked about this last week. Ohio State's secondary is as good as they get. They got 3 Sunday dudes. And when you have safeties,
one of their draft stock has gone down.
Yeah, when you have safeties, Denzel Burke got burnt, baby.
He, I joked on Twitter. I don't know if you saw this. That people thought I was serious. I was like, "Is that a linebacker covering Tez?" Because the way that he got beat on that seam, he looked like a linebacker. Like the way he flipped his hips, he was so stiff. He was stumbled out of his break, and then the closing speed was nothing. Tez just ran away from him,
yep.
And I just went, oh, God, he got cooked.
But Stein, knowing when your safeties can guard like corners,
mm-hmm.
putting Tez in the slot does not create the mismatch yeah. that they've had in weeks past. He starts Tez in the backfield. And Tez John, and to do that when you're still spreading the field and you have running backs that are receiving threats, so Jordan James goes out and he splits out wide, they're going to move a safety on him. Will Stein was creating mismatches mm-hmm. to where a linebacker was going to have to defend Tez Johnson out of the backfield. That's an advantage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, nobody went hook and ladder with their offensive linemen.
No.
Like Ben Johnson.
No.
Sewell this weekend. But
No. But you create as many mismatches as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible. Everybody, and I mentioned this last week, Evan Stewart's biggest game for Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
was in a three-point win over Boise State. He went over 100 yards. I thought both Evan Stewart and Trayshawn Holden were primed for big games because one of the reasons why Dylan Gabriel is targeting Tez Johnson so much is because he's the first read when you're going short to deep.
Mm-hmm.
And if the first read's open, you take it,
yeah.
right? Well, the first read wasn't always open. Evan Stewart made his presence yeah. felt.
And he's that deep threat who's going to be the dude, and he was. He was incredible.
He was outstanding. Trayshawn Holden, not as outstanding.
Oh, buddy. Look, it doesn't make him the worst human being, but you spit on somebody, you're... My whole policy on this is if you spit on somebody, whatever comes back your way, you earned it.
Look, that was a...
You did it to a guy with a visor on. Yeah. Of all, like...
In right in front of an official, it was a... Look, that's as boneheaded of a mistake as you can make.
That's as bad as it gets. I mean, yeah. the only thing worse than that is if you cheap shot a guy after a play.
And it was right after he had a big catch, too.
Oh.
He had a 32-yard catch on that drive. I mean, the jawing back and forth. It
that
was
happens.
At
yeah.
an
yeah.
elite level.
Yes.
But you have to hold your – you have to have your cool. You have to hold your own. I and that's going to be one where everybody out here, all the fans could say whatever they want. You know, us, we can say whatever yeah. we're going to say. The big one is, how do the guys in the locker room feel? How does that coaching staff feel? Because those are the guys that are going to hold him the most accountable.
Oh, he's
right?
going to run.
Because one of the... Yeah, given. But here's where that was so much more punitive than he even thought
mm-hmm.
or anybody would think. Because Kyler Casper was out
yeah.
you're with an injury.
You're already short.
I thought Justice Lowe played outstanding. He's a guy that is a rotational player. He doesn't get a lot of run. You always like to see local guys have success. And Justice Lowe, I thought he had two blocks, one in the screen game, one in the run game. That led to big games. Mm-hmm. And Trayshawn Holden, that was the big thing for me, is Trayshawn Holden and Evan Stewart, they're nasty on the outside. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of pride in blocking on the outside. And I was like, if you're going to pop any big runs, like Trayshawn Holden not being there is a big factor.
Yeah.
Not just in the receiving game. It was a big factor in the – he's a factor in the run mm-hmm. game. And so that was discouraging to say the least. I mean, and he knows it. Everybody else knows it. That was – doing that in front of an official, doing it at all.
Doing it
in front
all.
Of an official – the moment, the magnitude of the game, wow.
And the dumbassery to do it to a guy with a visor on. Like, just, it was like,
The guy can just point and be like, no, it happened.
Yeah, here you go. And he did. He looked at the ref and went.
Yeah, and then just wiped it off. I mean, that was not his best moment.
As a young idiot myself, I did appreciate his apology. I thought that it was, like, he took complete and total ownership of it, and I don't think you'll ever see him get to that point again. It's very clear that he's one of those players that plays on the edge. Like, that's what makes him so good. And unfortunately, in this one, he was a little too keyed up and went over that edge. Not to excuse anything, but when you own up to it in the way that he did, I think that you will see him become a better player, but also a better person.
Like I said, it doesn't make him the worst person on the face of the planet. In that moment, he's a, you know, a bleepity bleep. And he deserves everything that came his way.
Boy, that guy feels about as bad as you can feel.
Because that could have been the difference in the game.
Yep. If you don't know his apology, we need to get to that. I want to sincerely apologize for my actions during our most recent game. My actions were not only disrespectful, but a betrayal of the values of sportsmanship, integrity, and respect I strive to embody as a student athlete. To my Oregon family, I'm truly sorry for letting you down. You've shown the importance of teamwork, discipline, and respect, and my actions in that moment did not reflect the core principles I recognize that has negatively affected our team's reputation, and I deeply regret putting us in that situation. To Ohio State, I offer my sincerest apology for my behavior. It was completely unacceptable and a momentary lapse of judgment. I want to emphasize that this incident does not reflect who I am as a person or the values I am to uphold. Moving forward, I am committed to making meaningful changes, not only in managing my emotions during competition, but in setting a better example for my teammates and the broader community. I'm determined to demonstrate growth and maturity both on and off the field, and I hope I can earn back the trust of those I've let down. This incident has been a valuable lesson, and I'm dedicated to becoming a better person, teammate, and a positive role model in our community.
He definitely wrote that.
Yeah. That's the apology.
Uh-huh.
Put out by Trayshawn Holden.
Good for him.
Yep. That was a big mark in that game, and it could have had disastrous implications. As it is, I thought the offense, that's about as good of a performance that you can. Yep. That's a defense. I don't care who they played, 6.8 points per game.
Mm-hmm.
They moved the ball on them to the tune.
Damn near 500 yards.
Nearly 500 yards. That's a team that has only given up like 260 per game. Like, that was an impressive performance by Oregon's offense. That's a complete win. And for all this shoulda, coulda, wouldas that we've seen, you mentioned this a couple of times. What is the category Oregon lost? They had more total yards, more passing yards, more rushing yards, less penalty yards. They were better on third down, won the turnover battle. Time of possession they lost. Ohio State possessed the ball longer. Outside of that.
And a lot of that was accrued in the first half.
Yeah. A red zone efficiency, 5 for 5 for Ohio State, 4 for 5 for Oregon. I mean, time of possession, red zone efficiency. That was it.
Yeah.
This Ohio State team is really good. I still mean it. I said it in the spring, after their spring game. It's the most talented roster, in my opinion, in college football. I still believe it. Oregon won the game. The crowd made a difference. It was at home. If we get another one of these, sign me up. If it's neutral field, sign me up. I think it. You had two heavyweights going toe-to-toe. All right, coming up next, our Bellagio's player of the game, Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
All right, if you were listening to the post-game show, why don't you give us a call or a text, 503-864-6326, right now for our Bellagio's Pizza Very Best Player of the Game. If you were listening to the post-game show with Ryan Buckley and Will Ortner, Will Ortner knows exactly who it is, okay? First person to correctly text our Bellagio's Pizza Very Best Player of the Game wins a Bellagio's Pizza. How about that? 503-864-6326. Bellagio's Pizza. Making their dough fresh in Wilsonville daily. Local. Homegrown since 1996. Bellagio's Pizza. So give us a text. 503-864-6326. The Bellagio's Very Best Player of the Game. Wow. We have two incorrect and then a handful of now three incorrects. You guys obviously weren't listening very
good
hard.
Good Lord. They're guessing.
Well, somebody, you do have a winner. A winner has come in, and he was really quick on the gun. But somebody with the name, we have Evan Stewart has come in. We have Felon Gabriel, which I don't think he's a felon.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a felon.
That's what happens when he gets arrested in 10 years. And you're like, that's what happens.
Somebody just says James. I mean, it could be James anything. That's a good one. No, it was not Evan Stewart. It was not Derek Harmon. That's a good one to guess. It was not him either. It was Dylan Gabriel. Dylan Gabriel, the Big Ten's co-offensive player of the week. 341 yards passing, 32 yards rushing, 3 total touchdowns in the game. Dylan Gabriel was the Bellagio's Pizza very best player of the game. All right, let's get to hour number 2. We got a lot more college football that we need to get to. Still need to dive into NFL as well. And we got to get some Blazers preseason on the docket as well.
Because basketball's back,
they
baby!
Did start. But we got to continue. I've got one big question looming out of this game where Oregon wins 32-31. And it pertains to the head ball coach, Danny Dusty on the Fan.